At Farm to Table, we know how confusing healthcare is. We're here to simplify the healing process. We believe that healthcare should be simple. It should help people feel better. We listen deeply and take the time needed with each and every patient. We work together to develop a plan that fits into each patient's life and helps them to feel better faster. That's why we started the Table Talk podcast, to gather around the table with you, whether you're on your way to work, rocking a baby, or taking a stroll. We want to come together and learn about using a new healthcare approach that focuses on finding the treatment for the root cause of your symptoms. The journey for each person is unique, but together we can thrive. All right, welcome to our Table Talk podcast today. I'm so excited to talk about hormones. We have two of our fabulous pharmacists that are here with me today. We have Dr. Megan Morrison and Dr. Veronica Rira Gilly, and they're both in Texas. So I'm in Ohio and they're both in Texas this morning in a little warmer of a space. And so I will let them introduce themselves as we get started. So Megan's going to kick it off here with some just general stats about what's going on with hormone dysfunction in our country and our world, really.
Perfect. Thank you, Melody, for having me again. I'm loving this Table Talk podcast and getting to talk about all of these different health topics. I am Dr. Megan Morrison. And like Melody said, I am in Texas, San Antonio to be exact. And we're talking hormones today and hormone balance. So let's just start with what hormones are really quickly, because I think we hear the term hormone a lot, but maybe we don't actually think about what they are. And it's important that we know hormones are the messengers in our bodies. They travel around to different tissues and organs, and they affect so many different processes, things from growth and development to metabolism and sexual function, reproduction, and mood. And so those are pretty big things. So we definitely want our hormones to be in optimal ranges and in balance with one another so we can function properly and feel our best. And hormones are super powerful. Like, it only takes a tiny amount to cause these big changes in our bodies. And so there's different types of hormones. I think a lot of times, maybe some of us think of the sex hormones, testosterone and estrogen and progesterone and DHEA, but there's other ones as well. Thyroid hormones, and most of us have probably heard about thyroid hormones. There's cortisol, a big one. There's growth hormone and melatonin and insulin. So a lot of different types of hormones in the body that affect so many processes. So what affects hormone balance? We can talk about that. And ladies, jump in, because we have some big things to talk about here in regards to what affects hormone balance. So things like food and diet, it's a huge one. And I think we've mentioned before on the podcast and functional medicine, we always start with food. So food is huge when it comes to hormones, and the SAD diet or the standard American diet can really impact our hormones and our hormone balance.
Yeah. And the stress piece is one of the big ones that we've talked on the podcast so much, you know, about. And so I said, people have been listening to our podcast and don't realize how important stress reduction and stress management really, because it's not something that we can ever get rid of. We have to help our bodies to be more resilient to stress. And that plays a huge role in our ability to produce hormones. So we could talk a little bit further about the stress. And so the body, and we think about all these hormones that Megan just mentioned, we have our brain actually sending signals from the hypothalamus to different organs in the body. So for example, the ovaries in women, we get the brain sending the signals to the ovaries to produce our progesterone and our estrogen and the hormones that are produced there. And if our body is so stressed out and so focused in that fight or flight mode, our body is not sending the signals to those organs to produce hormones, because it's sending the signal to a different organ called the adrenal glands to produce the cortisol that Megan mentioned. So we get this fight or flight response. We're always in this anxious, very state and running from a bear almost, but in our normal daily life. And so that really causes a lot of women that should be having a good amount of estrogen, a good amount of progesterone, cycling well to stop cycling. There's women that completely go into an ovulatory cycle just from this effect because of the stress. And I was actually one of those people in a way. And part of it was also postpartum issues, but I had my daughter in 2014 and I breastfed her for 13 months. So of course your hormones decrease while you're breastfeeding because you have a hormone called prolactin. And I stopped breastfeeding her around, I guess it would have been March, April of 2015. And then I did not cycle again for another 6 to 9 months. So about the end of the summer, I was like, okay, I really need to start looking at what's going on here. Some women start cycling like 2 months after they have the baby. So clearly there's something with my brain that's not firing to tell my body to do this. And so I got my hormones tested and I was completely postmenopausal on my blood work. And so I was like, obviously this isn't going to be good if I want to have another child. And I went to one provider who's a fabulous physician, Dio. She probably wouldn't call herself functional as much as integrated. And she was like, you know what, Melody, you're not going to get this cycle back without acupuncture. And I was like, oh, like no one, there's not a physician ever that has just said, okay, the only answer to this is acupuncture. So I did combine acupuncture with some herbal products. One of the herbs I use is chase tree or Vitex. And then sometimes maca is one that can help stimulate that brain signal to produce those female hormones. But those things got my cycle back within a few months. And then by the end of the year, I was cycling again and then got pregnant with my son in the summer following that. So it really does go to show like how, and I was in a pretty high stress mode for other things in my health. I had a lot of GI things going on then, and certainly chronic infections, things like SIBO can contribute to your stress. So it's not just these outward stress things that we're talking about. There can be inward infections and stress that can be throwing things out of balance in your body. So a lot of women that I see in practice, some people come in with this very low hormone picture and we have to support that and get those things going. But we can talk a little bit about balance too, because there's not only is there low hormone pictures, there's sometimes on the opposite end where we see high hormones. And so Veronica, I don't know if you want to say anything about some of the other imbalances that we see in women, specifically talking about women's health hormones. For a second, we're not going to dive too much into thyroid today because that's a separate podcast.
There's estrogen dominance. That's really common.
That
causes a lot of issues with bleeding irregularities, very uncomfortable cycles, moodiness, breast tenderness.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Acne, sometimes like there can be mood issues, like even associated with it. A lot of people who have really tender breasts in the week before their period sometimes can tend to have higher estrogen levels and less optimal progesterone. And sometimes that could be the estrogen level is normal and your progesterone level is just really low, or it could be that progesterone is normal and estrogen is too high. And then other things, we could have low estrogen where we have potential for bone loss. So these hormones are not just important in their fertility cycle, but they're important in our heart, in our bones. And the bone loss potential, if you're walking around without cycling, there's potential if your hormones are really low that you're going to be at increased risk for things like osteoporosis and having fractures and things like that later in life. Certainly, we know that after menopause, a lot of the low estrogen symptoms that we think of as that postmenopausal, the hot flashes, the joint pain or skin issues, low sex drive, vaginal dryness, things like that. But if that's happening premenopausally, then for sure we have to address the symptoms. Even in those patients postmenopausal, and we're not going to go fully into bioidentical hormone replacement therapy today. I think that could be another podcast on its own as well, but there's potential therapies there. And the earlier that we address some of that, the more impact we probably have on the bone loss and some of those potential cardiovascular benefit. Anything else we want to say about symptoms related to women's health hormone balance?
I want to chime in on having women, their hormones checked and really advocate for themselves, because it can be something that shows up in so many different ways. And I can give an example from my personal experience. I was having terrible anxiety and I felt that I was right in my thoughts. I had been going through therapy, talking to a counselor, doing all the right things. And I really felt that my mindset was right, but my body, it was not happy. And I talked to my doctor about this and her answer was to give me clonazepam. And I was like, for me, that was not an acceptable option to have something that could impair my judgment and impair the way that I care for my children. And I just knew that something was off and it wasn't just anxiety. And it turns out, like you, Melody, I had the hypothalamic shutdown and I was essentially perimenopausal, just no hormones at all, no estrogen. And once I got my estrogen back in balance, I had no more anxiety symptoms. So really listen to your body, and it's okay to seek a second opinion when you don't feel that your provider is hearing you and offering you the solution that you want, or at least wanting to explore another option. And not that things like clonazepam don't have their place and can't be good. That was just a choice that I made for myself, and I didn't have a provider who was supporting me. So I had to go find someone else.
Sure.
And it's really important that if you're choosing to use bioidentical hormone replacement, the younger you can use it, or maybe not the younger, but the earlier in that perimenopausal and postmenopausal game that you can utilize those therapies, the better benefit you have on protecting your bone density. Mm-hmm. Since it's really hard to get your bone density back once you lose it, it's better to maintain it. So thinking about if you want to use those therapies early on to minimize bone loss, estrogen is so important for us to maintain our bone density. In addition to weight-bearing exercise, I want to stress that we need the exercise to tell our bones to make new bone.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, I think sometimes we get caught up in the cardio, and even myself, it's so easy to go just do a spin bike routine, but we definitely have to lift weights to get our bones in action. And low progesterone too is also, you know, very associated with anxiety, and maybe a little bit even more so with than estrogen. But I find a lot of women in perimenopausal period, or even in the before that, in this when we're cycling premenopausal period, have the ones that have trouble with sleep, the ones that are really anxious, tend to have lower progesterone or that imbalanced progesterone and estrogen. So getting those things checked is huge, because you can't just guess that. There's so many different contributing factors to a lot of these conditions. And even when we're talking about hormones, like insulin resistance and PCOS, like that has a role in our hormone balance. We've got the ovaries have insulin receptors. And so if there's a resistance to that, then we potentially can have anovulatory cycles. If we don't ovulate, we don't get that progesterone rise afterwards. And that causes this imbalance, this estrogen potentially being greater than progesterone, and some of the heavy bleeding symptoms that we talked about too. So I think one of the big things for me is like how many girls are in their early teens and sometimes even preteens that are going to the doctor and saying they have heavy periods or they have cramping. And like our healthcare system's like knee-jerk response to that is, here's some oral contraceptives. This is what you need to fix it. And most of these girls, there are certainly teens and preteens that may need oral contraceptives for preventing pregnancy. We're not debating that topic, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the use of oral contraceptives to just manage these symptoms. And when reality, like there's so many things that we can do to help balance, starting with diet, like Megan said, and pulling out inflammatory foods for that person. A lot of times, not that gluten and dairy are always like the big bad one, big bad wolf, but sometimes those can be contributing, especially if someone falls on that PCOS spectrum. The extra hormones in dairy products can sometimes worsen some of these symptoms. But I don't know about you guys. Have you seen that a lot in your friend group, circles, patients, that like people are handed, okay, I'm going in with this issue, and the first response from that provider is, okay, we can give you some birth control?
Absolutely. I see that very often.
Yeah. And the question too I have is like, to my knowledge, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, we don't have data of a 13-year-old taking oral contraceptives from the time they're 13 to the time they're 43 or 45, like when they're ready to like come off of that in that, you know, menopausal state. Certainly sometimes they take breaks for pregnancies and things, but that is a whole lot of time on oral contraceptives. And you guys, anyone want to speak to the like nutrient depletion piece of that, or are some of our concerns with those?
Yeah, I was just thinking as you're talking, Melody, like we just did a podcast, recorded a podcast on nutrient depletion.
Yes.
And I know that's, you know, whole nother podcast. So you have to listen to that. But so many times, like you said, young girls will go into the doctor for various reasons and they'll get put on oral contraceptives and there's no talk of how it can affect our nutrients and just the side effects in general. And one thing, looking at the functional medicine aspect, it can affect our microbiome and our microbiome, tying it back to hormones, that plays a huge part in our hormone production and our hormone balance. And so it all goes together. Veronica, we were chatting offline before we started recording, and it's so important that we talk about how everything is connected. And it truly is. Talking about sex hormones, and especially in women, but then we need to talk about also adrenals. And we're not going to get our hormones in balance if we're not managing our stress and dealing with those kinds of things, which Melody talked about. So I think one of the biggest things that I would like to stress is everything is connected, and you just can't look at each individual organ system separately. We need to look at it together. And talking about oral contraceptives, Melody mentioned, like, there's definitely a time and place, but we just need to question more and look into the effects and how it affects the body.
Sure. And if contraceptive is something that you absolutely need beyond the standard condoms and things like that, there's also IUDs that could be considered that might not have as much of an effect on the gut and the liver and the nutrient depletions. I don't know if we fully know that, but I think we know enough that maybe a lesser of the bad interventions, I guess we could say. I don't know if it's bad is the right word here or not, but there's certainly people that we need these therapies, but the fact that the therapy is not designed to be the sole thing that fixes all of our hormone imbalances. It's designed to cause your trick your body into not ovulating. That's like what the goal of these therapies are. And if we are looking for having balance in our body, that's really not what we're trying to do. And sometimes we need to still go to our standard OBGYNs. We still need to get those pap smears and rule out any potential dysplasia, which is like when cells can grow and change, and monitor for risk of cancer. Like, we're not saying not do those things, because we absolutely want women to be screening for all of those things that our OBs do a great job at. And they obviously do a great job at delivering babies. But when it comes to hormone balance, we really want women to recognize that so much of what we put in our bodies and what we put on our bodies, which Megan can talk about in a second, can influence our, you know, ability to thrive. Fatigue is a huge symptom of some of these low hormone symptoms. I have a patient that I'm working with right now that I really think that could be a big cause of her fatigue and being tired. The thyroid levels look normal, but you know, started to measure some blood work and saw that the blood work, wow, like, these are pretty low if this is really the timing in the cycle that she did it at. And so moving on now to looking at a Dutch test, which is one test that actually not only looks at our hormones, it looks at the excretion of our hormones and how our hormones get out of our body. If you've been around the functional medicine space or the natural space, you've probably heard of the term estrogen detox. And so estrogen detox is really when the body has to break down the components of estrogen and excrete them. Things that are important in estrogen detox, one is going to the bathroom. So having a good bowel movement every day is super important to that, because otherwise this estrogen can get recycled in the body and that can start to contribute to higher levels. Certainly managing the gut bacteria or any like potential bacterial overgrowth can be an important piece, because otherwise, again, the bacteria that help excrete that can cause issues. And there's, you know, something called beta-glucuronidase that can start to raise if we see the bacteria levels are getting high and they're not helping get rid of our estrogen. But then we also, you know, have the liver breaking down things, and that's where we need a lot of those really good B vitamins and, you know, other nutrients in our body, choline, things like that, to help drive estrogen down the right pathway. And otherwise, if it doesn't get down the right pathway, then we potentially have risk for it damaging DNA. And that starts to get into that conversation of this risk for estrogen dependent cancers. Like, are those potentially related to this damage to the DNA from the body's poor ability to get rid of the estrogen? So we love looking at that test. And the nice thing about that test is it also gives us a little peek into what we call an organic acids test, which looks at maybe some of these markers of nutrient depletions like we've been talking about. And then The other big thing the test looks at is stress. So we've talked about stress already, but we can't emphasize enough that stress plays a huge role. And so we'll see women that have low estrogen, low progesterone, potentially even low DHEA, and their adrenal hormones. Adrenal is the stress hormone that sits on the top of the kidneys, but that cortisol coming out of the adrenal glands will just be like off the charts. They'll have a huge total production of cortisol per day. And so we know their body is just at producing this excess cortisol. And so we have to decrease that process to really be able to get the rest of the hormones functioning well. So Megan, do you want to talk a little bit about the exogenous chemicals that impact hormone balance?
Sure. I wanted to give it up real quick for the gut microbiome.
Yes.
A few times, and I don't think that many people, including myself in the past, would think of those little bacteria in our gut that could help with hormone balance. Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons why we talk about the synthetic hormones and how they can, you know, influence the microbiome and, you know, how that affects the whole picture.
Yeah. Endocrine disrupting chemicals, I'll say EDCs for short. And those are things that, unfortunately, in today's world are all around us, but luckily there are things we can do to limit our exposure. But endocrine disrupting chemicals are in everything from plastics. Think of like plastic water bottles, plastic, I don't know, food containers, everything is, it seems to be made out of plastic these days. They're in household cleaning products, including like our couch and bed, like flame retardants and those. They are in personal care products, which is a huge one that I learned about, gosh, only, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 years ago. I'd never even thought about what I put on my skin. And I will never forget it was my grandma who I was putting on that self like tanner lotion. And one day she said to me, "Have you ever thought about what's in that?" And I was like, "Grandma, you are crazy. What are you talking about, right? Like it's sold at the corner store.
Right.
It's on the shelf. It's no big deal." And fast forward, I had some health issues and started learning about these toxins and all these personal care products. And it was just mind blowing. So everything that we put on our skin, fragrance and makeup and skincare and shampoo and deodorant, I could list tons and tons of items that both men and women use every single day, and kids, and they affect our hormones. A lot of these products have chemicals in them that act like estrogen. So they mimic endogenous estrogen and they can compete with that estrogen in the body and alter our levels and just really affect us. And I think some people, when I talk about this, kind of think, oh, whatever, these products have to be safe. They're sold on the shelves, but there's a lot of science and studies that have gone into these, and these endocrine disrupting chemicals are linked to so many health issues and, again, hormone imbalance. It's important that just start to think about that and think about how the number of products you put on your body or in your body every single day, and that adds up. The sad thing is we don't have studies looking at the cumulative effects, right? So maybe the hairspray and lipstick you put on to go out tonight, maybe using it one time isn't causing an issue or necessarily affecting your hormones too much. But if you're putting that on every single day for a decade or two or three, that adds up. And they have cumulative effects. They all work together to affect the body. And so it's just important we start thinking about that.
And as your largest organ, think about getting absorption across your entire body. It might be one thing, like you said, Megan, just to put on some lipstick and maybe some hairspray, but you're covering your entire body when you use sunscreen and lotions. So we should be very thoughtful with what we're putting on our skin, because our skin is our largest organ.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think Megan probably knows better than me, but as far as the things that they found in lipsticks, like lead and some other like additives that are hard for our body to get rid of, not just the fact that they can cause issues, but they're hard for the body to excrete. It takes a lot of work for the liver to do that over, you know, time. And our liver is certainly designed to help us get rid of these things, but sometimes it needs some extra support when we've put a lot of extra toxic load onto it.
Those beautiful colors that we get in cosmetics, some of them are from heavy metals.
Yes.
You know, like you've seen gemstones and things, these beautiful, brilliant colors are different metal salts. And so some of those end up in our cosmetics.
Yes.
Because they're pretty.
Yeah. Yeah. We get those beautiful colored eyeshadows and lipsticks. So definitely it's great though, that in today's world, the consumers are demanding safer products. They want to know what's in their products. And the beauty industry is huge, worth tons of money. And so they have recognized that consumers are demanding better. And so many of these big companies and smaller companies are now making safer products and that are more available and even more at a good cost, I should say. The goal is for everyone to have access to these products, whether at a department store or at your drugstore. It's so important.
Yeah, it's awesome that you can see so much now. Like before, I feel like you had to like search and search and there was like one product that like fit my qualifications for something, even like food-based. And now there's just so much because consumers are, you know, asking for it and willing to pay extra money to have something that's safer. So let's close out with talking a little bit more about testing. So, you know, one of the ways that we can test hormones is certainly through the blood. And I know that a lot of people, that's the easiest way to get started with testing because it's the most accessible as far as asking your provider to look at your blood test and see what's there, if it's low or if it's high. Sometimes though, I will say the blood ranges are really wide. And so it might appear that it's in the normal range, but we've talked before in the podcast about normal ranges versus optimal ranges. And so potentially it's in the normal range. Like I think, I don't know if it's the, I can't remember if it's the, which particular hormone, but it's 7 to 500, like where along those lines is optimal. Like obviously having an 8 in normal range versus a 499 in the normal range is completely going to have different impact and symptoms. But so that is a good place to start. We have to remember that hormones are also bound to protein. And a lot of the standard tests, they can measure the free hormone in the bloodstream or the small amount of hormone that's able to enter the tissue or the total hormone. So they are not measuring like the whole picture sometimes. And so we have to be careful about that. These attached hormones that make up the majority of the hormones in the blood are not readily available to be used by the cell. So I take that back. Normally we're measuring the whole hormone in the blood and not the free portion that's available to do the work. And so we have to look at those differences sometimes. So saliva testing can be really popular for some people. And that sometimes can, especially for people that are monitoring bioidentical hormone replacement, sometimes certain hormone ways of measuring are the ones that are the most well studied for monitoring particular types, whether we're using oral progesterone or topical progesterone or estrogen and topical. There's all these different nuances to the best way to monitor. But certainly if we're new to just testing our hormones, if you have a doctor willing to run a progesterone level or an estradiol level or total estrogen level or DHEA, testosterone particularly, you can order a free testosterone and a total testosterone by blood. So that's a pretty easy one to look at. And typically we're looking at testosterone a lot in our patients that are more insulin resistant or potentially like PCOS or trying to rule out PCOS. So sometimes the hard thing about a lot of the blood tests is it doesn't necessarily look at the balance as much of the progesterone and the estrogens. And we can see that a little bit better with some of our saliva tests or even the urine tests, like we mentioned, which is called the Dutch test. And then the adrenal issue piece is one thing that's what we can't really measure in the blood. The only time we ever measure a cortisol level in the blood is if we're trying to rule out really high cortisol levels and we give patients steroids the night before and then measure their cortisol in the morning to see if their cortisol was suppressed to look particularly for Cushing's syndrome or hypercortisolism. But there's a lot of like dysfunction in between with that cortisol. Sometimes people might be on the edge of that, but not be diagnostic. So, and we don't do that very commonly unless we've got people with really uncontrolled blood sugars, really severe depression or high blood pressures, like all together is when we're thinking about hypercortisolism or a specific body type. But otherwise, blood can give you a peek, but really looking more in depth with either saliva or the urine test is going to give you more information. And the urine in particular, like we mentioned before, is going to give you the information about the breakdown of the hormones. And so the estrogen and how that's breaking down, how the progesterone is breaking down, where in this picture. So we love looking at the picture and actually we may be posting this to YouTube. So I'm actually going to show what this looks like here on our screen, which I know the podcast listeners won't be able to see. So these are like your steroid pathways and like your DHEA and your progesterone and your testosterone and how the cortisol is breaking down. And so there's so much involved in this. It tells us certain nutrients, certain medications that could be affecting steroid. We didn't even get into that, but there's spironolactone is a drug commonly used for patients that have high testosterone because it helps to inhibit the conversion to testosterone. And so people that have a lot of acne sometimes will get that drug. It's fixing the symptoms of the problem, but it's not necessarily helping us get further to the root cause. But that can be sometimes there's other interventions that we can do with diet. Certain flavonoids can be helpful and depending on what we're trying to do to modify the hormone picture. So it's really complex. And that's one of the reasons why that we have people really, you really want to work with someone who knows what they're doing. It's going to take a lot longer to get to your goals if you're just trying to navigate this on your own. I don't know if anyone else wants to speak to that.
I was just going to say real quick, I think that what's cool about the Dutch test too is, like you said, showing those metabolites. And one thing about estrogen is it breaks down to different metabolites. And some of those metabolites are cancer causing. And so it's just so important to know how it's being broken down in the body, especially if you have a history of cancer in your family or just certain things.
Yeah. And sometimes the adrenal piece, I think having that on the test, even at the most basic, like the basic Dutch test, you can do a couple of different types of Dutch. One that also includes some saliva assessment of the adrenal glands, which I like to do because it gives us that what we call a cortisol awakening response. So the 30 minutes after you wake up, what your stress hormone level is really documented in the literature to be related to this HPA. We call it HPA axis dysfunction or this stress dysfunction. That is helpful to know if people aren't getting that, or they're not waking up because they're either have low amounts of cortisol or their body is in this dysregulatory cycle where they're not, you know, getting that response that she should, that they should be. Or if that number is like off the charts, they're like just waking up and like in that stressful mode. That can be a really helpful indicator of what's going on for somebody. So any other thoughts on hormone balance or testing or things that we want to give people?
I was just going to say, like you mentioned, Melody, work with someone who knows how to interpret these tests and who can order these tests. I don't know if your standard conventional medicine doctor is going to know about the Dutch test, but it's so neat that we can run it and look at everything going on with your hormones and then be able to alter these pathways with, like you said, food and supplements and lifestyle. It's so neat. And it's just basically what functional medicine is all about.
Yes. And so, acupuncture, things like that. Massage.
Yes. And yes. Our pharmacists at Farm to Table can order the Dutch test. And if you think that you are having some hormone imbalance issues, definitely we would love to help you out.
Yes. Awesome. Awesome. Veronica, any last thoughts on hormone balance?
No.
Okay. That's all right.
So, you guys did an excellent job covering so many things. And I think we'll just have to wait and get some feedback from our listeners so that we can talk more in depth about what they need to hear in regards to their hormone balance.
Yeah,
but I think
sure.
You ladies did an excellent job.
Yeah. I would just echo it.
Our listeners an overview.
Yeah. Echo what Megan said about if you're not feeling well and you're fatigued, you're tired, your cycles aren't regular, there's symptoms that you're experiencing and your providers that you're seeing are just brushing it off as, oh, this is normal, or this is, here's a way to regulate your cycle, see if you feel better, and they offer the birth control, but you're not, that's not what you want, then that's really when you need to seek out someone that's going to listen to your story, listen to what's going on, and figure out what's actually going to help you and to be able to thrive, because those symptoms aren't normal. And there's a lot of reasons for fatigue. It's not just hormone balance. Some of it obviously could be thyroid. Some of it could be nutrient depletion, inflammation. Like there's a whole host of lists. It's a very non-specific symptom, but I know it's something that women tend to, that's really what brings them into the office, is that, and the, if it's hair loss or whatever the symptom is, but whatever you're feeling and it's not well, make sure that you're finding someone, whether it's someone on our team, which we can help you in many states. We have a website that you can go to, farmtotable.life, and that's LIFE, and farm is PHARM. And if you want to check us out, you can click on make an appointment and you'll see all the different states that we have licensed providers in. And if you can't find your state there and we can, you know, refer you on to someone else. So feel free to contact us and we'd be happy to help you support that. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you, ladies, for joining. So exciting to just continue to talk about these topics and just help women and other people listening. We didn't talk a lot about testosterone today, but we could certainly talk about that on another podcast and what testosterone deficiency could look like. All right. You guys have a good one.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We're excited you are on your journey with us. Find us online at farmtotable.life, farm with a P, and on Instagram at farmtotableteam.